All right, so my name is Rebecca Angove. I am here to talk to you a little bit about public health institutes. And I just want to ask, is anybody in this room familiar with, knowledgeable of, heard of a public health institute? Oh, well then you guys can sleep through the first half of my presentation, or might learn something a little bit new. I don't have any disclosures. I'm supposed to read this verbatim. Nobody else did. Can I not follow the directions?
You're fine.
Okay. I usually follow directions. What is a public health institute? Really, a public health institute is a nonprofit organization and it's dedicated to advancing public health practices. NNPHI, which is the National Public Health National Network of Public Health Institutes, serves 28 public health institutes in communities across 24 states. They do work across the entire nation, and this group of public health institutes was founded in 2001. And they really play a unique role. You can see on the slide, I won't read it to you, but they have positioned themselves to really advance public health in communities as well as in policy and government in both public and private sectors. And for today, I just want to focus on the, I think, two key reasons that they're well positioned to support academic and community partnerships. So one of their main goals is to enhance organizational capacity and also convene multi-sector partnerships. And so I am located right in that building. I am at the Louisiana Public Health Institute. We were actually started in 1997 before the National Network of Public Health Institutes. We can look out our window and see the Superdome, so that's kind of fun. The things are doing much better recently. We at LPHI, our mission is really to catalyze sustainable policy and systems change by collaborating across diverse sectors and communities. We do that by developing and expanding partnerships and engaging communities. We collect, analyze, translate, and share information with partners and communities to really inform decision making and support quality improvements. And we also provide a lot of technical assistance, resources, training to build communities and increase organizational capacity and drive innovation. And we do have public as well as private relationships and partnerships. LPHI is a trusted convener, and that's really a term that we have given to ourselves, and it's really important. So we are not a governmental institute. We're not an academic institute. We are a nonprofit institute, and our focus is really on implementing programs and evaluating programs. We have a strong connection to community, and then we have a lot of expertise in facilitation, which positions us really well to be in that trusted convener role within an academic community partnership. So I'm going to just put all that background information in context using an example project. So we were brought in as a partner for the Deepwater Horizon Research Consortia. So this was funded by NIEHS, and our group is called GROW, that is the Gulf Resilience on Women's Health. And the academic partner was Tulane, and we also had two community members, MQVN, which is a Vietnamese, it's a community group that assists Vietnamese Americans in New Orleans, and I do not know what MQVN stands for because it's not in English, so I apologize. My Vietnamese is not very good. And BISCO, which is the Biointerfaith organization, they actually were formed in 1994 to build capacity in some of our more rural and bayou area parishes or counties. We call our counties parishes down there. And so really we expand beyond New Orleans at LPHI, and this project in particular really expanded down into the communities that were affected by the oil spill. And LPHI was brought into this project because we were we held a convening role in the project. So often academic institutions will be given grants, given project monies, and they realize that they don't have the time, the expertise, the resources to do really good community work, or they don't have the relationships built to do community work. Louisiana Public Health Institute, LPHI, has developed a lot of these relationships, and so we're often brought in as the partners to be kind of the, I hate saying the word middleman, but that is, it's kind of what it is. We really are a connector, a convener. So we bring the academic communities in, and then we bring the nonprofit, actual grassroots communities in together into projects, and we really facilitate those relationships. And so the request for that we had from the community was that they, so the community members, really wanted more information and knowledge and training on community-engaged research and community-based research. So you'll see a couple logos up here, and we have really built this curriculum and drawn on work that's been done, great work that's been done, that you have been presented and given some information on today. And we took a lot of the different publicly available curriculum and information that was out there, a lot of the literature, and we built something that was really tailored for environmental health and for this particular community group based on their needs and their requests. So the we had 6 modules, and these were full day sessions. Even though this was a request that the community wanted more information, we did ask that the academic partners attend the trainings, and so it was a co-learning experience for everybody involved, and I think at the end of it, the academic partners got just as much out of it as the community partners. The community partners were very happy that the academic partners attended, and it was really built to be flexible, because we knew there was a lot of information put into 6 days, and these were at day-long monthly meetings. So every month we had one session or one module, and there was homework in between, and then there was ongoing project work being done outside of the curriculum, because these were ongoing academic community partnerships that had other work to do related to the GROW initiative. And so you can see from our list, we really kind of went all the way through from an introduction to what is community-engaged research, basics on research methods, CBPR process, the difference between CBPR and community-engaged research, how to formalize and sustain projects and partnerships, did a little bit on evaluation, some on dissemination. The funding that funded this curriculum was the CODC, which is the Community Outreach and Dissemination Corps of the project, and so we really did have to focus heavily on outreach and dissemination. So anybody, probably everybody in this room, has done some sort of CBPR, and you know how important keeping participants engaged in a training like this is. So we did, you know, everything you've heard today. We did group discussion, role playing, videos, collaborative brainstorming. We learned some really interesting lessons. We learned that the communities really had a history that they didn't share at the beginning of the project. So the MQVN was established in 05, BISCO was established in 94, and they had a lot of negative experience with researchers, government agencies, academic partners that they didn't really disclose to their current academic partners or even to us as LPHI, but it kind of slowly came out over these days, and it was a really great space for them to be able to share, dare I use the word, heal from some of these relationships, because anybody that has been in an academic community relationship knows that as an academic partner, you carry the baggage of your institute with you. And as a community partner, you carry the history of your community with you. And so this was really a nice space where the community members could say, you know, in the past, they've asked us to be on this project, and then they never told us the results. A lot of that was coming out in the project. There was this resentment and poor communication. Nobody really knew where it came from. when we all got into a room and really talked about it and discussed it, a lot of that history kind of came out, and it really improved the relationships moving forward. So it was a very great experience just being in the same space. And then, of course, we fed them and we trained them on top of it. But I think one of the best parts of the training was really just having that safe space to share. And I think LPHI, as that trusted convener, we weren't, at Tulane's house, we weren't at Bisco's house, we were in a neutral space. And that really, I think, helped facilitate some of these conversations coming out. So I had to put the slide out here. My community members were very proud of the logic model that came out of it. So this is a logic model that was developed in the training about the training. And so when we came into it, we really just said, okay, we'll put together a training. We'll get the best work that's out there, put it together for you guys. And because of the request of the community, we thought it was a great idea. As we went through, we really realized that the inputs, the process, the outputs, a lot of the outcomes and the impact really was, you can see the impact of the trust and improved communication. So it was really great for everybody to see the importance and the impact of the time spent doing this. So I think this example was really a formal, the first formal training that we'd ever done on CBPR at LPHI. We'd been in this role a lot. We'd never really formalized our role in these academic community partners. And so moving forward, what we really want to do is this: the CBPR training we put up will be disseminated through Tulane, and it's really focused on environmental health projects. And then LPHI really is working on a formal community engaged research training that we're going to have all of our future academic and community partners go through because it was such a great experience for both sides. We're asked to be in this role a lot. Sometimes we're brought in at different stages in the research process, and so having something that can really improve the relationships, I think, is a perfect space for public health institutes to be in. And then another thing that everybody in the room knows is very challenging is how do you maintain these relationships when the funding and the project ends? I think that's another real strength of a public health institute. We can be the owner and the nurturer of these relationships. A lot of our research partners at our academic institutions, they're busy, they move on to other projects with other communities. And if our organization, Louisiana Public Health Institute, can really hold on to those relationships and nurture those relationships, we can also help convene future projects around topics of interest to the community and almost be a connector for the community to other researchers so we can really drive research that the communities are interested in doing. All right, and I do get to say questions because I think I'm the last one, and then we'll have full questions, but I'll leave that to the facilitators. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you. People have stayed well on time, so we have about 10 minutes. And thank you, Rebecca. So first question. Who's got one? I have one. Yes. And what is this small group? What can you just tell us who you are?
Sure. Hi, I'm Dr. Cindy Carman. I teach health studies at American University. And I do a lot of community-based work. I apologize for the late arrival. I was just wondering if the wonderful presentations were online through the EHA portal? Or if not, okay. Just curious if they will be available.
They were recorded. I think you might have to
I think there is a tag, right, yeah.
So
you might give your card to each of these presenters, and they might. I can't see for them. Thank you.
Well, I ask this because I'd like to share some of the Southwood students that are interested in giving up their work, and it's selfish as well. But again, I apologize for the little more.
Thank you very much. Another question? Yes.
And you are?
Charlie. Serena. I had a couple of questions. First off, this is really, I was going to the CBPR related events. They're always really cool. I'm very excited. Thank you for your all of the presentations. Two questions. One is a short one for y'all from San Diego. I know you use the term collective impact a lot, and I know in evaluating.
are using it as our framework. How we're articulating how we're measuring it is still in development, but we have obviously indicators and then the community storytelling. But yes, we are using it as our
actually, Dr. Amy Schultz and I have gone to Colombia, to Bogota, because they've actually been doing a lot of CBPR work there, and I'm sure that it's been in many other countries as well, too.
And just
imagine,
Andrew, you said you,
yeah.
Sorry. Andrew, you said you all work globally.
Yeah. And there is quite a bit, actually. I mean, actually, even 11, 12 years ago when I was at WHO, we were working in India in that mode. We didn't call it that design. But it certainly was. So if you look at the stories, I wouldn't limit your search terms to the key words people use today. Because actually, the idea of CBPR, I wouldn't take them out of the United States at all. I was great with all the international research prep in from our connections. So I would say a strong yes.
Great. Was there another comment? I'm sorry, I think I have questions?
Yeah.
online, the community toolbox, the Kansas community toolbox, there have been a lot of this step, say this, say that you could amplify it.
Yeah, I know.
Didn't work for you, sorry.
So.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, another question. Yes.
Question for
sorry, we know who you are, but maybe not.
I'm sorry. Toby Citron, University of the Hughes School of Public Health. Question for Kenya Moranish, presenter. How do you maintain, can you say something about how you maintain support by your major funder that you talked about without being dominated by your major funder?
Sure. Well, we have quite a few years of experience of this. So everything we do in terms of funding is unrestricted. How we apply. Now, we agree, like, this partnership is going to be in Savannah, but that's the extent of the sort of quote-unquote strings attached to the funding. And what we've seen happen through increasing community engagement is that now what started with a single funder is a diverse sort of group of stakeholders, people who have seen success and said, I want to help too. So that's balancing out any sort of dominance of the single funder. But really, it's about the partnership. If you don't trust each other, then it's not going to be sustainable. And that's where we have to start. And that is true, you know, the people who we get to serve in Canada, as well as the people who support us. And that just becomes a hallmark of how we enter community. You go and build trusted relationships and you make sure that there are no restrictions other than something as general as this partnership is going to focus on the health and well-being of Savannah with the goal of improving, period.
I don't see a lot of difference either between having to balance the dominance of that kind of funding source for data and that kind of funding source. And most people here probably also have a lot of experience with governmental grant funded programs that are 1, 2, 3, 5 years in length that have very specific goals and guidelines that have to be achieved. And if you're basically having to work in a really tight mold as to what's going to happen in the program. And so if, I think the problem working in those milieus is being able to be broad while still maintaining the grant's integrity. With this, it's kind of the other direction. How can we keep it focused enough within the balance of the funding? I think it's just a whole other way of working.
Other questions? Yes.
It was a 2-year-long discussion before we actually started launching our this first formative research foray in secondary, you know, research, like let's learn about Savannah. And then let's go into Savannah and see what everybody told us about it, whether it's true or not. And just as an aside, inevitably that's not the case, right? If you go look at all the county health rankings and all the CDC data on a community and then you actually go there and start meeting people, you learn so much more about the intricate and complex relationships that actually create that community than any of those secondary sources can ever begin to tell you. So, but it was, you know, 2 years of speaking, not entirely, but predominantly with Charles and Robin Morris, who were the initial funders, you know, to say, so this is how we work, and gain that trust with them, so that then they could say, here's the funding, and then boom, off we went, and then it's just, from that point, it's our normal timeline. It's between 6 and 9 months of formative research, and then we launch whatever we decide the first sort of project program will be. So that started in early 2013, and here we are today.
Andy.
I was just going to mention that that was very similar for us in the Detroit University. We spent about 2 years up front because those of us in the community had that historical memory of the university coming in and researching us and going away and not knowing what the results were. So there was a lot of trust up front. So when the folks from the founding academic partners from the university came, many of us came and stayed at the table just because we were, the university was coming into our community and it didn't look like they were going away. We wanted to make sure they weren't going to hurt the community. So we pretty much stayed there at the table to make sure they didn't do any harm. But then after those 2 years of working together to develop that whole process and trust building, the relationship changed, and that's when we were really able to start engaging in the research.
I think what we keep hearing is in an age where we're trying to speed everything up and we all want instant results, just push a button and you'll get an answer, that this really says no, slow, a lot of time, but getting funders to agree to that can be tough. Amy?
First of all, I want to know how we get your funder.
Yeah. We all want that.
My second question, though, really is about how you, I noticed on your slide about the evaluation, you know, the magic care design. Could you like just talk a little bit about how you did that evaluation?
Sure.
And where you got those data?
Right. Well, so, Cambridge Institute, and in fact, again, Institute, keyword there. But part of why we were founded was to demonstrate what a healthcare system versus a sick care system could look like, right? And how a focus on prevention could actually happen in communities. So that's one of our very explicit goals, and that's why I say part of how we've learned how to reach that is that we won't start a program without a plan for objective health outcome indicator, because that's how to get funders like that, right? You need the numbers of real improvement in health status to get in the door, and then you need the stories of individual people's successes to win their hearts and minds. So it's a mix of quantitative and qualitative data to build that relationship. And if you're sitting there without it and without a history of that, then you're really starting from a very deep deficit position, which 10 years ago, that's where we were. We didn't have anything. But then now we work in multiple communities across the country, for example, and all of them are producing outcomes like what I showed you, or even greater gains in individual health. So that's really it, and word of mouth, people hear about this. And then one community, they have networks that spread to another community, and networks that spread to another community, and people now call us up and say, we'd like you to come to our community. Nonprofit hospitals, for example, are doing it all the time now. Come work with us so we can keep people out of our hospitals. The second part about the matched pair design, it's a bit of a risky move, actually, right? Because the matched pair means that people need to be part of your baseline and part of your post, and in our case, part of our fund 1 year post and part of our 2 year post. So we make that commitment to individuals right off the bat, which helps. But that means more people go through our programs than we actually get matched pair data from. So our end for the outcomes inevitably drops. Why? Because people, for example, go back to school and get a new job and move, right? Or their life changes because they went through this program, but then they're not available to be in the evaluation, and some people drop out for other reasons that everybody experiences. But at the same time, you know, we can say, because it's a matched pair design, this is conclusively the changes that people who went through the program experienced. We're not comparing, you know, 150 people, 50 of whom dropped out, to 75 people, 25 of whom weren't in the baseline at the group average level. It just, in my view, raises the bar. It also makes it harder because you really need to stay engaged, because the one thing people don't like to do is show up and have the blood run. Right? But we have a whole sort of protocol set up for our partners locally, because we're not the face of the program, ever. It's always a local partner that is there, but we help them say, what you're doing here, yeah, you're going to learn about your health status, but this is one of the ways you can say thank you for this program existing in your community, right? And help us maintain it. So we engage them in that sustainability issue as well. Okay.
So, do you get those data working with the community health center?
Yeah, in this case, all that came through personnel at the FQHC, Federally Qualified Health Center, working with participants in the programs they collected as individuals.
Others? And you're welcome to ask questions, too, if you can't
remember each other. Well, I just wanted to, you know, your question was legislate about capacity building. And as I was listening to you, the one thing I caution you is you might, if you're going to launch an effort like that in the community, you might not want to call it sort of basic skills training. Right? You might want to call it something that people want to learn about and build that subtly in curriculum, because otherwise the whole issue of stigma around literacy, poverty, and capacity is just going to creep into people's minds. So maybe you want to say that, but I'm proposing this basic switch, and I'll take that criticism. But it works.
You know, when we have a large corporation there, and large hospitals, and both of which have, development programs for their employees already, and I'm almost wondering if it's integrating rather.
Can you speak up a little?
I'm almost wondering if it's worthwhile integrating resident leaders into some of that programming so that they're actually doing the same kind of training that staff. The staff have communication
issues too. Yeah. In regards to that, I'll give you an example, just from community engagement mobilizing. One of our associations did a walking Wednesday, so more attracting people for the health promotion aspect. But what they did is they were really trying to evaluate the sidewalk infrastructure for the engineers and the planners. And so the facilitator would note comments of like, oh, there's a crack in the sidewalk, oh, there's a sidewalk. And all of this, and then build that in to then the grant funding for more infrastructure for walkability in the community. And as that kind of happened, there was the socialization aspect, and then residents being like, oh, well, yeah, I do want a sidewalk in my neighborhood, how do I get one? And then it kind of, turns in there for like the engagement, mobilizing, advocacy, and all that. So there's different ways to go about to start the formal infrastructure.
Mask it,
but like then they become more aware that they want to engage, that they want to change, and that's a good idea.
Those are great questions, and I suspect I want to hear from people here as well as anyone in the room who has some experience with these are tough. Why don't we start here, and then we'll go to the broader.
Give an idea for the last part of the question. I think it starts with your, not with your communities and increasing capacity there, but I really think it starts with your professionals, your academic partners, your professional partners, your research partners, because if they value and if they show that they value the expertise and the perspective of the community members, I think that really helps build the trust. I think it's really important. I know I work with a lot of patient communities, and they don't understand why their experience matters, why we want them to participate. And once you really get them to understand that they are the expert in their experience and they are the expert in their community, and you need them to do effective and good research to evoke change in the community, and make sure that your research side of it treats them appropriately and recognizes their expertise, I think that's probably the best first step.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, just might help with this. So we did a bunch of policy advocacy training. So it's like, well, build community engagement and policy change. And one of the early things, and we defined policy quite broadly, as little p as well as big p policy. But then that studies they worked on was, you know, change ordinances to the council or go to, you know, the school policy. Well, you know, what if the school board has no power over school policy? What if the city council doesn't really have, you know, what if those decisions are really being made by other entities? And so it was a lesson to us that we need to think about ways in which policies, rule policies, key policies get changed, that there, you can make a difference, but it's not necessarily through the standard, how do you go about passing legislation? And that's really important, I think, in communities to build some successes and also look at how, you know, doing power mapping might not end up with the mayor. Doing power mapping might end up with these layers in between that communities actually can make a difference in. Because if, you know, the last thing any of us want to do is reinforce, you know, sense of hopelessness or lack of collective efficacy, right?
Yeah, so I have an apology to everyone. I, as a timekeeper, I completely lost track of time. So, further comments on this. Let's just connect here so that we can, and if you come up and